Welcome to The Seer Show. Join us as we explore medicine, health, mental health, mindset, and fitness, guided by lifelong seeker of knowledge, Sifu Raphael. He will lead us on a transformative journey with groundbreaking insights and extraordinary guests from around the world. Together, we'll dive into the latest holistic approaches to well-being and the profound connections between mind, body, and soul. Sifu Raphael's expertise in positive thinking, resilience, and personal growth will inspire you to reach new heights. Get ready for The Seer Show. It's time to embrace a brighter, healthier, and more empowered future.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on The Seer Show this morning. I hope you're all having an exceptional day, or at least morning. I know, Naomi, it's in the middle of your day, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's 2 p.m., 2:30 p.m.
Thank you so much for joining us. Everybody, just say a quick hello, and let's get into why we're here today. Chad, hey, where are you coming from?
Anchorage, Alaska.
Beautiful. Aysen, yourself?
Yeah, I'm in Austin, Texas.
Naomi?
And I'm in Cyprus, Europe, so a bit far away from you.
And I'm in New York, so international, if you will, right? So we need to talk about our focus goals, and we also want to talk about the connection between art, mindset, and mental health. And we're also going to talk about relationships, because everybody here is an expert in one thing or another, or maybe in all things. Who'd like to take it away? I'd love to hear what your insights are. Sounds like Chad is ready. Let's go for it, my friend.
Well, you mentioned goal-focused planning, and you had somebody on your show the other day, a few weeks ago, talking about just the sustainability of things. And I think too often we go through life mindless, aimless, you know, not necessarily mindless, but aimless. And, you know, waking up every day on accident, just trying to get through the day. And, you know, there's a difficult thing to balance living in the moment, but still planning for the future. And building that connection between what we're doing today and what we want to be doing in the future, who we want to become, where we want to be. And that's I think a huge hurdle. And it goes into relationships, it goes into finances, it goes into health and fitness, so many different disciplines in life, creating meaningful, measurable objectives, and then setting up your day, setting up your habits to gradually step towards those things, work towards those things. So we live with intentionality and not reactionary.
I love the habit part. Can we talk a little deeper into why people need to be intentional with their habits?
Well, whether you realize it or not, most of our day is spent in habit. So much of what we do is actually automated. To which shoe you put on first, which hand you're going to stick out to open which door. We had a situation recently where we lost power, and you still walk into a room, you know, power's out. You still walk into a room and you go to flip the light switch, because you don't think about it. When you walk into that dark room, it's your kitchen, whatever, you know where the light switch is. Your hand just goes there automatically, even though consciously, you know, it's not going to work. The power's out, but your body from the neck down doesn't know that. And you're responding out of habit. So a lot of our day, some people think 40 to 50% of our daily decisions are out of habit. So if you don't build those habits intentionally, chances are those habits are not going to serve you well in the future, and they can actually detract. So here's the tough thing about habits too, if we're not intentional. Bad habits or unhealthy habits usually have a long-term cost, but an immediate payoff. So just think of, you know, the bite of cheesecake or hitting the snooze button or picking up your phone to watch Instagram reels instead of reading a book. You know, there's a dopamine hit, there's a pleasure sensation, there's relief, but the payoff is negative. The consequences are long term, and the cost is long term. Good habits, getting up early, going to the gym, eating healthy, the cost is in the short term. The price is in the short term. The payoff is beneficial and long term, but it's in the future. So if we're not intentional with making those choices, it's easy to gradually get pulled into those short term pleasure, long term pain type habits, because those are the ones that have the immediate rewards. They're usually the ones that have the most negative long term consequences.
Absolutely.
If you're in a reactionary state, you know, having a bowl of broccoli or a bite of a donut, I mean, the donut is always going to look more pleasurable, and it is in the moment. But we have to have that mindset of building that future version of ourself, and what action in the moment is going to better connect me again with where I want to be, what I want to be doing, who do I want to become. Those things don't happen by accident. Good lives are not built on accident. They're built with intentionality.
Right. Well, one of the things that, and you talked about, you know, hitting that light switch or putting a shoe on and all that. I think one of the things that we don't recognize a lot of times is what we do daily. Right. Every day, what are we doing that reflects on the outcome at the end of the day? And a lot of people will blame others instead of taking responsibility for their own actions. They'll say, you know, I'm not happy because so and so said this to me. No, you're not happy because you accepted what they said to you. So when you think about the habit of even accepting what other people think of you, could be detrimental to you, because it could be a good thing or it could be a bad thing. I love the fact of, we can talk about habits all day long. I also want to talk about, you know, one of the things for me, I'm aware of every action I take. So you talked about the shoe and immediately went to like, I always make sure I'm like, what shoe did I put on yesterday first so that I can change it? Because I don't want my habits to determine my actions. I want me to determine my actions. Habits are great if they serve you well. So for example, every morning I'm up before 5, right? Whether 4:30, 4:15. And one of the habits that I have is I have to shower. I have no choice. It's that I must feel that cleansing. Plus I take a cold shower at that time. And it doesn't matter if it's winter. I'm in New York. It could be freezing out. I'm taking a very cold shower because it not only does it wake me up, but it there's so many health benefits to that. And when we consider our actions, they do reflect on everything we do. So I know, Naomi, you want to talk about how we can take our mental health to a different level if we start working on the intentions, the art that's around us, all the different things. Would you mind sharing with us?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm an artist. I'm not an artist by trade. I'm a self-taught artist. And I discovered actually the healing effect of art on me a couple of years ago. Then, you know, COVID started and I went through trauma. My dad passed away, my grandmother passed away. So I had a hard time with coping with things. And I just noticed that I had to do something. And I did art before, and I was an artist before COVID too. But then I realized I really need to do something and go back to my roots and start to work with art. And I realized that art can help us express emotions that are very hard to put into words. And it also helps us to express extreme emotions of anger, of pain, sadness, but in a very, very safe manner. So you are not self-destructive. And it really, really helped me to cope with my own trauma. And that's why I love to spread this message and love to talk about it, because, you know, if I can reach one people with this, I mean, you know, or maybe I can help others. And you don't necessarily need to be an artist to help yourself. You just do something at home. You just, you know, paint or knit. Not talking about you guys, but whatever you do, crocheting or, you know, anything that it comes to art, or play an instrument. I mean, that will definitely help you. And, you know, no matter how disturbing you think your project is, it's much healthier. You put into your energy into these than to keep it bottled up into yourself, because it will have long-term health, physical, mental effect on you if you put it up for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the habit, if you don't mind, and then I'll let you go. The habit of doing something positive, art, but if you have to go through a whole 20 minutes to get your art brushes out, to get your paints, to do all this, you're not going to wind up doing it. So when we create a habit, we should leave those things out so they're top of mind, right? You say, you know what? I'm feeling sad. Let me have a pen and paper. It's available. I got a sketch pad, or maybe I got my brushes. So we have to create the habit so that we can get out of that mood, right? So this way I love habits, because they can help you. Like, I just started playing a guitar. I never played a guitar before. But if I have to go in my closet, take it out, open the case, do this, take it, I'm not going to play. I play every day because it's hanging on my wall. I got a really nice display. I put it on my wall. And now I'm considering getting another one to have, well, I have several businesses. So I'm considering one for one of my businesses. So wherever I go, if it's hanging there, I could just pick it up and start strumming or fingering or whatever. But if we make it hard to get to that thing that's going to help us, then we may not do it, right? We may not do it.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. You have to maybe dedicate a corner at your home or in your home where you can do it, just a desk. I mean, you don't need much, but you need a dedicated space so you can, you know, keep those habits and routines alive, because those are, I mean, really important. And also with instruments, I have several instruments, you know, around the house. So if I feel like I drum, I have a frame drum, I have a hang, I have a tongue drum. So anywhere I go, I can still, you know, play on them for a couple of minutes. And, you know, it fills me up with joy. And it just, art gives you like kind of meditative state as well. If you do anything with art, it just, the monotony, the creativity, it just, yeah, take you to another world for sure.
Mm-hmm. Chad, were you going to say something?
I was just thinking about this idea of art and a couple things. First of all, you mentioned Sifu talking about basically making good habits easier, you know, and eliminating barriers to good habits. So, you know, somebody who wants to play the guitar, you're going to put that out. You're going to put it in a place where you notice it. So it triggers that, oh yeah, I haven't practiced today. And you know, maybe if your normal habit is to come home and watch TV, when you leave for work in the morning, you're going to put the remote in a cabinet and you're going to pull out the guitar, put it on the couch. So that's your immediate trigger. So I think back to intentionality, you can do a lot of things to make your unhealthy habits, the habits that don't serve you in the long term, harder, and make the healthier habits that do serve your future self easier in the short term. But to what Naomi's talking about, this idea of art, one of the things that I would have not considered myself an artist 10 years ago. But I think like all of us are born artists. And I think a lot of times creativity is educated out of us for practicality reasons, because it's hard with a classroom full of 30, 40, 50 students to foster that individuality and lean into the strengths of each kid and support them in their weaknesses. And that's one of the reasons we homeschool our kids, and not everybody has that opportunity. And I get that, but we do, I think each one of us is born as an artist. You see a little kid, they everything is art. I'm actually at home right now because it's 3:30 in the morning, 3:45 in the morning. And I've got, this is the schoolroom, and I've got art from all of the kids around here. But we get to this point where we're worried about what other people think of us, and our art gets smaller. You know, that creativity gets ironed out. And I just think it's so important because I work with fairly wealthy individuals and building this financial freedom. But then a lot of folks lose that meaningful pursuit. And I think art is a great way to have that drive, to have something continue to challenge yourself, because going back to habits, a lot of times we get to a point of comfortable competence where we get good enough at a thing and then it just becomes automated. We don't really get any better because we don't push the envelope. And just think of driving, right? Most of us probably drive every day. Sifu, maybe you don't because you're in New York. I don't know.
No, I do.
But most of us drive every single day, but we're probably not significantly better drivers than we were 5 years ago, because we've gotten to a place of comfortable competence and we automate that. We don't push the envelope. We don't stretch ourselves. I think art, whether it's you're a musician, whether you're a communicator, whether you're a painter, a public speaker, whatever, you can challenge yourself and stretch yourself without the detrimental effects of a car crash, right? That's why we don't get better at driving, is because when we do push the envelope, the negative effects, the risk is too high. So we stay in that comfortable competence. But with art, I think it allows ourselves to express on the edge of our ability. And yeah, we might miss a note, we might misspeak, we might whatever, but we can come back from that, retrace our steps, and be a little bit better next time. So I think art is so important for building a well-rounded individual and continuing to flirt with failure, or what most people consider failure, in the adventure to learn and the adventure to become a little bit better version of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Love it. I love it. You know, one of the things I remember, a commercial, it was draw within the lines. And then there was a girl, it was a car commercial, and she's like, I'm not drawing between the lines. And she's driving and she's having a great time. So, Eisen, one of the things that I can see how in a relationship, your habits can be detrimental to your relationship, or they can build upon your relationship. Would you mind sharing?
Yeah, that's right. Definitely agree. Thank you, Sifu. So yesterday I was thinking about, you know, listening to Chad and Naomi. I was thinking about, you know, one of the clients I was talking to, and he was saying that how his habits really are detrimental. I wouldn't say he was a client, more so like a prospect. So because he wanted to take my program, but I was asking him, do you have 2 to 3 hours a week to work on this? And, you know, he thought about it for a minute and said, no. And I was like, what do you do that it's going to take so much time that you don't have 2 to 3 hours a week to work on something and build your dream relationship? And he said, yeah, you know, in the mornings, it takes me 2 hours to get ready. And then afterwards, after work, I get tired and I just sit there and, you know, let my mind race, but my body is done. So a lot of times it's his mindset and habits that are inhibiting him from becoming better, because if his habits is, you know, it takes 2 hours to get ready, and then later on the day, you can't do anything after work, so there's not much time left. So just understanding and building good habits in a relationship as well. Like Chad was saying, if the TV remote is very accessible, you're going to just want to sit down and watch TV. Whereas like if it's in the drawer or something somewhere else, then it's harder for you to access it. So the path of least resistance sometimes is detrimental to your success and your relationship. So building good habits, like going on, having set times for dates and having certain things you have to do in a relationship to keep it strong is very important. And those habits are going to become a lifestyle as well.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, one of the things that, if you recall the movie Ghost, I know I might be dating myself, but they're doing clay work together, and that's art. And there's that love, that bond that we can start to share with our partner. And it doesn't matter. Sometimes to build that relationship, sometimes people fall in love because they're friends at first, and then they create something together, right? So maybe they're doing artwork, maybe they're finger painting. You know, as children, one of the things that, and you said it perfectly, Chad, that it's taken out of us as a child, we're told, no, you have to conform. You can't do what you're doing, right? So one of the things for me I always see is, what can we do together, not only as a couple, but maybe as a family? And Chad, you talked about homeschooling, which I believe it's incredible because it gives that connection that so many people don't have nowadays. Because what happens, the parents go to work, the nanny takes care of the child, so the connection is more with the nanny than the parents. And I see that because one of my businesses, I see the nannies bringing the kids to class. I met the parents maybe once, and then it's the nannies who come. The only reason I allow that type of relationship to come into my business, because I'm very family oriented, is because I see that the kids need an outlet. So that's why they come to me. But one of the things is always, whoever brings the child, they can't leave. They have to be part of the experience. So now whoever's there, I don't care if it's grandma, aunt, whoever, they're going to connect with that child in a deeper level, because now they have to help the child do certain things. And then I say, in order for the child to get better, you need to do it at home as well. So that connection, I believe that we need to do. A lot of people, here's one thing that I have a boxing class. And sometimes I get couples. Sometimes I get people who just actually have met and they wound up getting married because they met at my place. And what winds up happening is now I tell them, listen, this is the best thing you can do together. Because if you ever want to have a fight, at least you can put your gloves on and you can go for it. And at least it'll be a healthy mix of what you're doing. And they're like, we don't fight, we come here for that. Mm-hmm. Like, great, I love it. So when we consider connections, when we consider community, when we consider goals, isn't it better to have somebody in your corner?
I think it's absolutely essential, especially when you look at the sustainability, right? How to make good actions last longer. Again, I work in the financial industry. Building wealth, it's not about get rich quick. It's building wealth slowly. It's a marathon, and it's difficult. It's like staying in shape. You have to commit to that on a daily basis, a weekly basis. But it's not something that happens overnight. It isn't any one day that you become fit. It isn't any one day that you become wealthy. It isn't one day that you have a great marriage. It's those little actions that you execute relentlessly with tenacity every single day. But to do that long term for decades, because that's what it takes. If you're doing that alone, if you're doing that on an island, there's days you want to give up, there's days you want to quit. And most people do. And especially in the area of finance, a lot of times we silo that. We do finance alone. It's become taboo. We don't talk about it. I mean, same thing with relationships. We don't talk about, everything's fine. You know, oh yeah, our marriage is great. Oh, things are going great with our kids. Like, we don't share those areas of our lives. We end up doing them in isolation. And too often people quit because we don't have that community. And that's one of the things that makes, like, I think CrossFit so successful. It isn't the programming, it isn't the equipment, it's the community, because most people are more willing to let themselves down than to let somebody else down. So if I'm making a commitment just to myself. Again, whether that's financially, emotionally, fitness-wise, health-wise, if I've got a community around me that holds me accountable, I'm much more likely to stick with that thing than if it's just between me and me. Because for a lot of folks, if it's just between me and me and I quit, nobody else knows. I can just stuff that goal, you know, underneath the mattress, so to speak. Nobody ever knows that was anything important to me. But if I put that out there and I've got you guys holding me accountable to something, my chance of success and adhering to that goal and overcoming failure, overcoming setbacks is so much higher.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, one of the things that I do every day is I post a fitness workout. I did one this morning and I did a chair workout. And it wasn't your typical workout, right? People usually don't work out with a chair. So I'm showing people how you can do anything. And in 5 minutes, you can start to get in shape. 5 minutes is not going to get you in shape. But hey, after 7 days, you've done 35 minutes where normally you would have done zero. Right. So every day, I think, Naomi, you've seen some of my videos.
Yeah. Right?
And for me, I've always posted videos here and there, but I decided in 2022, the beginning of it, I wanted to change people's lives without having them pay a dime, pay anything. So I posted on my socials. And one of the things I said is, let me do something that's easy enough for them to do, to follow, to go with it. And so I've had people in their 60s, 70s, people 18 years old, follow me. And they're like, what a great workout, this, that, the other. And it's like, oh, I didn't know I could do that with a medicine ball or a kettlebell or dumbbells or exercise band. But it's about getting started. And we talked about making it simple, right? Putting the remote control away for your TV. Get rid of it, right? Now, what do you have to do? You have to get up to change the channel if you need to. So what's happened in America? We've become the laziest country, right? And what happens when we look at somebody else working really hard? What do most people say? They question it. Like, what are you doing? Why are you working so hard? You should slow down. Otherwise, the boss is going to want me to work hard. Right. So we need to take accountability that if we want to change something, it starts with us. Thoughts?
Absolutely. And you mentioned that we always need someone in your corner. And sometimes you don't get that support from your family, even if you love them and, you know, they are close to you, but they are not necessarily in your corner. So that's when, for example, a coach comes into the picture, I think, or a mentor, or you call it whatever you want. But I think that's so important that you always have someone to walk with you and to help you and to be in your corner, because there are, you know, some days in your life and you don't have anyone, and that, you know, mental health and problem with that comes into the picture, and people losing their lives and giving up because they just don't want to continue because they don't have anyone in their corner. And I think that's just so important. So that's, you know, just I just thought that when you talked about like someone in your corner, yes, you definitely need someone. It's that that's maybe it's not your spouse, maybe it's not your best friend, because you can't talk to them about topics that you don't want to, and yeah, and you need someone to help you with.
Very interesting when you know, a lot of people, they claim to be an open book, but they have hidden chapters, right?
Everyone has hidden chapters, for sure.
Everybody has a hidden chapter. You know, Ison, one of the things that I'm thinking, that when you help someone as a coach, your goal is not for them to pay you. Your goal is to have the satisfaction of them meeting someone special in their lives. Because what winds up happening, what's the ultimate goal for a dating coach?
Right. I basically follow their goal. So like whatever their goal they have set for them, and I want to help them achieve it. And a lot of times I challenge them a lot. So they're like, hey, I want to do this. I'm like, no, you can do a lot better. Let me do this for you. And it's all about the mindset, right? A lot of times they think there's no way I can get there. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's a very small goal. We got to aim bigger. You got to shoot for the stars if you want to land on the moon, right? So That's part of it. And having a good support system is very important. Having a mentor, understanding where to go, where the blueprint is. Like your parents, I agree with what Naomi said earlier. Your parents might not, your friends or family might not be the best people to turn to whenever it comes to your best support system, because a lot of times they might not know what you're trying to do. They might not understand you. Just like my parents were engineers and, you know, going to college, that's what I studied, right? But then if my parents were professional athletes, you know, they would have taught me to, hey, play sports and this is the route to go if you want to get a scholarship or be in the league somewhere, right? So that's why it's important to understand and be surrounded by people that have done it in the past.
Definitely. Yeah, having that support is important. But sometimes, and you're right, we may not find the support where we need it. And Naomi, you are 100% right when it comes to coaching. I just want to clarify one thing. Coaches want to get paid. Mentors don't need to get paid. Right. So I do both. I am a mentor to some people, and their success is my payment. So that's how I mentor them. Right. And I have several people that I mentor, but then I have other people that pay me because I'm their coach. So it's two different hats that I'm wearing. Right. One is I'm fully invested in their success. The other one, they're investing in me to make them successful. So I just want people to understand that there is that difference when you say mentor and coach is not the same. It's a little different because, Chad, you have clients, right? Asen, you have clients. Naomi, you have clients. But do you also have people that don't pay you and you sometimes go out of your way to help them?
Yes.
Definitely.
You know what? There's something on this though that is critical. Whether you are a professional coach or a mentor, I think it's the idea of buy-in. It's skin in the game. Mm-hmm. We had a bunch of family over for I can't remember what holiday, Thanksgiving or something. My wife does a lot of hosting. That's one of her gifts. But we're cleaning up afterwards, and my wife's like, do you notice that a lot of our family asks you the same questions over and over again? They don't do anything about it. And I was like, trust me, I notice. You know, it's irritating. And she goes, do you have clients that do that same thing? I was like, absolutely not. And she said, well, why is that? I was like, well, two reasons. Number one, I can fire my clients. I can't fire my family. And number two, my clients pay me very, very well. They have sacrificed something to get that advice. So if they don't follow it, now you have that psychological disruption where they've paid for something over here, but they're not following it over here. And so I think even in a mentoring relationship, there has to be some sort of buy-in. There has to be a sacrifice because people don't follow free advice. As a coach, you're trying to push somebody. You're trying to get them to do something they wouldn't normally do. Maybe push them a little further along a path that they were already on, or get them on a new path that they haven't started yet. But it's pushing through discomfort and pain and again, those setbacks that we talked about. So even in a mentoring relationship, I try to make sure there's still buy-in, because I can't want a better future for somebody more than they want it for themselves. And I've run into that a lot where you feel yourself giving, but you want more for them than they want. And that's where coaching breaks down. It's where mentoring breaks down. You know, but again, like if somebody has they're actually paying for that mentor and they're paying for that coaching, if it isn't followed, which still sometimes happens, right? But at least there's that cognitive dissonance where that person has to wrestle with that idea that I told myself it was important enough that I paid the money. I bought the package. I signed up for the seminar, whatever, but I'm still not going to follow it. So there's that cognitive dissonance, and I think that can be created in a mentoring relationship too. But again, that's where that art, I think, comes in. Like how can you give something without maybe a financial price tag to it, but there's still some sort of a cost. So people feel like they're a part of the process. And I think that mentoring relationship is more successful when both parties have to make a sacrifice to be in that relationship.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. You know, I've fired clients and now I don't work with somebody right off the bat. We do an assessment. If they're willing to do the work, then I'll take them as a client. I'll even let them try it for a month. And if I don't see them doing their work, even if they go, yep, I'm in, I want to buy the whole, nope, sorry, this is not going to work for me, because then I'm not being satisfied. Right. So as a mentor, I have to be satisfied that you're doing the work you're asking me for, or the guidance you're looking for. And for me, I have mentors and I have coaches. I listen, my mentors probably deliver more to me than my coaches, without a doubt. But why do I pay my coaches? Because I want something that they can give me. Can my mentor give it to me? Yes, but they're already giving me so much. So that's why I have both. And for me, that's the important thing for me. So my mentors, exceptional human beings. I mean, if I had to pay them what they're worth, I'm talking millions of dollars is what I would have to be paying them, probably on a monthly basis. They give me so much. But if I did not understand the value of what they're giving me, then I would be robbing them, right? I would be stealing from them. So for me, it's important to understand that if you are going to mentor somebody, you're right. If they don't value you, it's not worth your time. But if they value the lessons that you're going to be helping them along, it's everything. It's totally everything.
Well, you kind of said this in not so many words, but before somebody works with you, Sifu, you make it difficult for them. And, you know, we're taught to make it easy for people to buy your services and things like that. But if you are a coach, and I look at myself as a coach, I'm a wealth coach, you know, you're looking for that long-term relationship. Because a lot of what we are providing here in this group is not something that is clicked on like that. It isn't a transaction, it's a transformation. So that means that we're looking for a longer term connection, which I believe means we should make it harder to get started, because we've got to filter out the people that don't really want it bad enough to make the sacrifices necessary. And I was just thinking as you were talking, going to date myself now, going back to the old Karate Kid movie, right? The Mr. Miyagi didn't charge anything, but he made it difficult to get started. There is a sacrifice that Daniel had to make, because there was a buy-in necessary. I just think to some of my mentors, and one of them actually lives in New York City, Nick Murray, tremendous author, speaker, huge part of why I'm at where I'm at today professionally. But you know, mentors, I think, do often, there's some sort of an on-ramp where there's work that has to be done, work that has to be shown. And a lot of times a good mentor, what they're willing to pour into somebody else is commensurate with the amount of work and effort that is shown on the part of the student.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. How important, Asen, is it for your partner? You've helped them get together, right? That's why somebody came to you. And now they may be asking you for some dating advice because they're already in the relationship. Maybe they're 3-6 months in. How is it important for the partner to buy in to the goals of each other?
It's extremely important. So it's all about growing together. I mean, that's the common goal, right? If someone can't grow together, they're going to grow apart. And a lot of times if someone's very similar to another person in the very beginning of a relationship, but then 6 months later, their goals change, everything deviates, then, you know, the relationship's going to fall apart. Just like if we're building good habits and, you know, the guy's building bad habits or the woman's building good habits, et cetera, their habits aren't aligning anymore. Before, they might have connected on watching movies together or going out to drink. But if the guy all of a sudden wants to go to the gym and doesn't want to sit on the couch anymore, so, but the woman still does, then they can't really have anything in common. So it's important to grow together as humans and also in a relationship.
So how important is it to project your future goals, even on a date, maybe even very the first date?
Yeah. Like I would say set boundaries all the time, right? So like, this is what I want. This is what I don't like, right? I want kids. I don't want kids, right? And tell them that, hey, you know, I was talking to this girl. It's like, yeah, I see myself as a millionaire in the future because I was a millionaire at 27 and I lost my money. And then she was like, oh, I don't like millionaires. And then, you know, there's a disconnect, right? And then I was like, why don't you like millionaires? Because she thinks, oh, they're selfish. They're overworked, right? But then I'm like, I gave all my money away. That's why I don't have any more money. So it's all about the mindset and differences in that. So that's why we wouldn't get along, because if my goals are different than her goals, and what she thinks she knows or what she thinks defines me is different than what I think defines myself, then, you know, that's, I think that was your question.
No. Right on. So when we consider relationships, and even Chad, how many kids do you have?
6.
What? Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I love it.
And I was chuckling when Aizen was talking, because one of the first things I asked, we weren't even officially dating yet. And I told her, this is not good advice. Like, I wouldn't recommend doing this. But I told her, like, hey, if this relationship is going to go anywhere, I need you to be willing to homeschool my kids, my future kids, you know. And and she starts crying and she's like, that's what it takes. And here we are. That was almost 20 years ago. Wow. And we did get married. We did have kids. And now she's homeschooling them, even though we had to have a little come to Jesus moment with the kids last night, because a couple of them weren't pulling their weight. We're like, guys, you're going to live in this house. This is kind of work you're going to do. But anyways, I was just thinking about that. Like, I didn't put my goals out there in the right way. There was a healthier, more tactful way to do that. But even as an early 20-year-old, I was like, hey, this is what is important in my life. Can you get on board with this? And I think I thought that was going to scare her away. And when it didn't, I was like, I've got somebody here that might be worth me risking more for.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have 6 kids.
Wow. Congratulations. I'm number 10 of 12. So
that's awesome.
So I had a similar situation where I had a partner and I said, listen, for the next 2 years, this is what I need to do in order to build this particular business. Cause I knew exactly how it was going to go. Where was it going? Are you on board? Absolutely. I said, look, I may only be able to see you on Sundays. And you know, you can come, I have this time slots available. You can come to the place. We'll have dinner, you know, I'll order stuff and whatever. Never did it. And then that relationship went south because they claimed that they were going to be part of it. And then they turned out not to hold up the end of the bargain. And so what winds up happening is it was for the better, because it taught me that this is not the right person for me, because they were not on board. They did not see my vision. They had their own vision. And sometimes we have to have a shared vision, even if we have to adapt, like your wife adapted. She goes, and you said she cried, right? And then you guys had a moment where she said, you know what? This is also what, maybe I wasn't even thinking about it, but now it makes sense because I see the image. I see the image in the future. I can see your dream, but I don't want to just have it be your dream. I want to be part of that dream. So I think that's where the connection has to come in, where we become part of the ultimate dream. And if we're a couple, or if we're a family, who's driving the bus and who can take over if that bus driver gets tired, right? So I think that's important.
And just, I notice it so much in my line of work too, because there's often one spouse or the other who is more of the financial person that handles the investments, that handles the budget, that handles the planning. And a lot, and oftentimes people will say, oh, my spouse doesn't need to be at the meeting. I'm the one that handles that. But to your point and to what Eisen said earlier, like that might be true, but you're still building your lives together. At least you should be. And so it's so important for us to get both those spouses together. And sometimes I'm taking off my wealth management hat and putting on, it feels like a marriage counselor hat. But it is important because you see people's lives do this. You see people's lives deviate. And if that's happening, then the financial planner is going to get caught in the middle of that. And we, if people can't get on board with where their financial goals are going, they're probably not going to get on board with where their life is going. So we won't take on clients that won't meet together and have a healthy meeting of the minds and do that goal planning together, because we've seen that unravel too many times, and then we don't want to be stuck in the middle of it. So I'm seeing it in that area of life. And I could just tell you, I mean, we all know this, but just to the people that are listening, how important that is to have those shared goals where you're supporting one another's goals. One of the questions we ask people is, if you never had to work ever again, if you had enough money coming in from your investments, so you didn't need your paycheck, you might not necessarily retire, but you no longer need to produce a paycheck. You're financially independent. What do you want your lives to look like? The answers we get, you can tell, like, people have never thought about this before, but it's spouses who've been married for 15, 25, 30 years completely surprise each other because they've never thought about what that other person would want their life to look like if they never had to work. So it's just interesting to hear you guys talk about it too, because I see it come up over and over again in what we do. And I don't think there's a lot of communication around shared goals.
No, not at all. You know, there was I think it's a joke, but there was a story about a man that played lotto and it was like $20 million. And he said to the wife, well, I think we won. And she goes, well, what are you going to do? And she goes, easy. I know. We're getting a divorce. I'm taking half. He goes, perfect. Here's the ticket. I only won $20. So you got to be careful of what you really want, because he understood where she stood, right? So with that in mind, remember, people, your goals have to be unified as a family. And if you live alone, if you are alone, should you be? Because God wants us to be connected to one another, right? You need somebody in your life. We need to connect daily, every day. Reach out, touch someone in a positive way, right? Reach out, text someone, tell them you love them. Reach out to more people. And if you want more, follow my guests. They're all incredible. Naomi Chide-Eisen, you guys, great advice today. Thank you so much. I got to tell you, I'm going to play my guitar several times today. Why? Because it's easy. It's right there on the wall. But here's the thing. Do it where you have a passion for everything you do every day. I want to thank every one of you for coming here on the Seer Show. Incredible show. And all of you are incredible human beings. Thank you so much for being here. Do me a favor. Stick around for a minute. We're going to say goodbye to everybody. Any last words before we take off?
Just thank you so much for having me again on your show.
Absolutely.
Sifu, thank you for having us. And it's an honor to be here. And just want to remind your audience, too, that you guys are the biggest variable in the trajectory of your life. And what you do matters. Your choices, your habits, your decisions, that's the foundation of how your life is going to go. So, recapture the agency that you have.
Beautiful.
Yeah, like everyone said, I'm very grateful as well to be on the show. And this was a great, great topic. These were great topics that we discussed. And yeah, and I just want to inspire and give hope to everyone that's listening.
Yeah. God bless everybody. Have an exceptional rest of your day. And if you're watching this on the replay, share it with your friends, family, and loved ones. Because guess what? You want them to be on board and you want them to be living the dream together. Take care, everybody.